Good evening, folks, and welcome. This is Dan Kahn, the National Field Director of the Peace Alliance. We still have a few minutes before the call officially starts, and there are some folks who are on early, so I thought I'd give you a chance to introduce yourself. I'll sort of call out your name, and if I mispronounce it, or you can restate it for us and tell us where you are, just so we have a chance to hear some voices in the room. I'll start with Joanne. Go ahead and say hi, Joanne, if you want, and tell us where you are.
Hi, Vashon, Washington.
Wonderful. Welcome. And then how about Margaret? Hello, Margaret. Margaret?
Yeah, Margaret DiPiazza, New York. Hello?
Yeah, New York City,
Margaret.
New York?
Yes.
Wonderful. We went straight across the country. And Barb Kickbush?
Yep, hi, I'm from Pulaski, New York.
Okay, terrific. And Deborah Paz?
Hi, I'm in Atlanta.
Hey, hi, Deborah, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Kundi, will you let us know where you are, where you're calling from?
Yeah, Pacific Grove, California.
Great.
Hello.
Welcome. Hi. So we just went back and forth all across the country. And now it is the top of the hour. So I think we'll dive into our agenda. For folks just joining us, I'm Dan Kahn, National Field Director for the Peace Alliance. And I want to welcome you all to the Peace Alliance December National Field Call. I'm very grateful to all of you for joining us tonight. We have a full agenda, as usual, and for those who are new to this, it's pretty generally the second Tuesday of every month at the same time. So I'll start by going over that agenda. In just a few minutes, I'll introduce our special guest, Dr. Cindy Bigby, and after she speaks, we'll have space for questions and discussion with her. And after that, we'll have a few words from our board president, Judy Kimmel. Then we'll hear from a member of the Department of Peacebuilding Committee, Kendra Mong. And next, we'll focus on the suggested action for the month of December. And finally, we'll have space for community sharing and would love to know what's happening in your area or in your peacebuilding life. Regarding the requested action for December, it needs to be done in the next few days because Congress is very close to adjourning for the year. So in all of your inboxes, in your email inbox, you all should have received about a half an hour ago an action sheet for the month of December. And you may want to open that up sometime in the next half an hour or so and have a look at it when we discuss it. So we'll discuss that action in about 30 minutes. So if sometime you have a chance to open your email, you should have that attachment. Now, usually before I introduce a guest, I like to tell them a little bit about the folks on this call, tell them who the Peace Alliance field really kind of is. But in this case, Cindy Bigby is truly one of us. She has lobbied Congress in Washington, D.C., hand in hand with some of you. She has delivered pies to her own congressman's local office in Tallahassee, Florida, in solidarity with many of you around the country. And she has maintained and shared a vision of positive, proactive, and practical steps towards more peaceful relations on Earth, as so many of us have. And this is a vision that she has put into practice at least as much as anyone I know. Cindy and I have been buddies from the day we first met on the Washington, D.C. Metro platform during the 2007 Peace Alliance Conference. She was leading a crew from Tallahassee, Florida, and I was leading a crew from Gainesville, Florida, and the typical North Florida rivalry almost instantly softened into a chorus of unified singing lobbyists for peace on that cold day. I believe she will be sharing some about her journey, but I will give you a little preview by saying that she joined the Peace Alliance nearly at its inception, became a local field leader, and then went from promoting best practices in schools and correction systems and internationally to founding and developing systems of her own invention, which have grown into a highly successful model program, bringing a unique combination of restorative practices and empathetic communication training to teenagers and their families who are largely referred from Florida court systems. I have been lucky enough to experience this program firsthand, and I'm thrilled to be currently working alongside her in this endeavor. So I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, my dear friend and colleague. Welcome, Cindy.
Thanks, Dan. I know you are on such a personal level and now on a day-to-day level, so it feels like, a little funny to be introduced in that way, but it's all true. The story and how it came to be is all true. So I am going to share a little bit about my journey into the Peace Alliance and then what's come of that, and I've been told that I have about 10 minutes to do so, so I'm going to just launch right into that, if that's okay. I really credit, in a weird way, and I know we probably have folks from all over the place and probably various backgrounds, and I'm hoping what I'm about to share is really not offensive, but it is the story, and it is my truth. I credit a lot of my journey to George Bush, because when he was elected for the second time, I really could not get out of bed that day. And I stayed in bed and I cried all day long. Because I live in Tallahassee, Florida, and I have friends from all walks of life, and on all ends of the political continuum. And I had a hard time understanding, why is it that people that I love, and people that live all around me, they see things so differently, so much so that somebody that I didn't feel aligned with at all could be elected for a second time. And it was weird because the week before that, Marianne Williamson had come to Tallahassee, and she gave a presentation, a lecture at Florida State University, which I was lucky enough to attend. That was just days before the election, and she had talked about this campaign for United States Department of Peace, and she had also mentioned how the week after the election they were going to have some kind of a conference out in California, and so I kind of just logged all of that. And then fast forward to the election, I couldn't get out of bed, and I remember the next day waking up thinking to myself, I'm going to that conference. I don't really know where it is. I don't know much about it, but I just know that I want to be with people that have a vision for what we want in this world rather than what we don't want. And I called my husband and I said, I know this is crazy, but I'm going to California tomorrow because I really want to go to this conference and be around people that share a vision with me. And I booked a ticket. And I went to the airport, and this was all very crazy for me because I had never done anything like this in my life. And I got to the airport, and I literally didn't even know where I was going. My plan was I was just going to get off the plane and then figure it out from there. And I got to the airport, and I was checking in, and they told me that I was running late and I was barely going to make the plane. And all of a sudden, I got really scared. I'm like, look, this is crazy. Who does this, And I said, forget it, I'm not going. And I canceled the ticket. And I remember walking out of the airport saying to myself, okay, I'm not going, but I'm going to do something. I am going to be the district level representative for this campaign. And I had never done really anything political before. And so that was what got me started on my journey with the Peace Alliance. And I became the district leader here. And as Dan just mentioned, went to D.C. twice to do the lobbying and really have that firsthand experience of what it's like to try to move a bill forward in our country, which was amazing. And then another part of my journey related to all of that was that back in those days, we used to have these conference calls with the Center for Nonviolent Communication, one of the certified, very well-known NBC trainers, Mickey Cashton, used to get on teleconference with hundreds of us, was my understanding, and teach us a little bit of NVC. And that was when, teleconferencing was brand new. And so it was this weirdest thing to be able to do, what we're doing tonight, because it was so new, and to have this connection with people all over our country. And, the mission was to try to actually be the bill, right, to learn how to bring peace forward in a way, even with people that might not see eye to eye with us. How do you have that conversation? How do you forge those connections? And so that was my beginnings with nonviolent communication. And right from then, I just loved it. I loved the work of NVC. And there's lots to the story, which got me into like pursuing more training and going and getting trained with Marshall Rosenberg, who's the founder of Nonviolent Communication. And then from there, I went on to the story was that my daughter was a senior in high school at the time, and I had been thinking, what can I possibly give my daughter and all of her friends as a gift when they go out into the world, because I really want them to know how much I love them. And I had just been trained with Marshall Rosenberg that year in November, came back from the training and thought, well, the greatest gift I could give these kids would be to teach them NVC before they get out into the world. And so I approached the principal of their high school and said, hey, could I teach an NVC class for credit here? You don't have to pay me anything. I just want to do it. And she knew me and she trusted me, and so she allowed me to set up a seventh period, four-credit class teaching NVC. So that was my first jaunt into teaching the NVC process. And all along the way, I really wanted to delve more into this because while I was campaigning for the Department of Peace, it began to be very apparent to me that maybe the best way to have people here locally understand what the DOP could do would be to actually like bring some of these processes to my community so that they could actually have a firsthand taste and experience with the work. So that was all part of it, but really a big part of it was just to kind of give my daughter the skills before she got out into the world. And I often joke that if you really, really, really want to learn nonviolent communication, teach it to your child and then have to go home and live with your kid, because it really forced me to be in integrity with the model in a not-so-easy way. And so once I started teaching it, you know, just like anything, if you really want to learn it, the best way is to actually teach it. And I loved teaching it, and I just couldn't stop from there on out. I started offering classes out in the community, and my biggest goal was really to always get it to the kids. And in those early days, when I taught it actually for 2 years at the high school, in those early days, we had a city commissioner who was one of my main proponents for the Department of Peace work, and he came and sat in circle with us on a couple of times to talk with the kids and find out what their experience is like. And he actually is our mayor to date. So the guy that's the mayor of Tallahassee right now has been tracking and knowing about this work for a long, long time, which is a great thing, because he also has been one of the major people behind setting up a teen center in our community, with one of the major components of the teen center being this restorative justice program. So as things worked out, many of the kids that I taught the NVC process to in that high school years ago wanted to keep that process alive. I'm still in touch with many of them. Many of them are still doing the work. I actually have had one of them working with me straight up for the last couple of years. She still volunteers in my program. And some of those kids went with me to the teen center when it opened and talked with the director about using the NVC process there at the center as a whole and possibly in the restorative justice program. So that was years ago. And the director at the time was very intrigued by listening to the kids, listening to what their experience is like. And when the time came, I was asked to come and teach a little bit in the restorative justice program. And then as things worked out, the director stepped down and there was an opening and I was asked to take over as the director in the restorative justice program. And so for the last four and a half years I've been running that program here. I really think that we have a model that is cutting edge and replicable. A big part of what we do is draw upon our community and the volunteers. When I started teaching it 4 years or so ago, I was trying to model it off of what I was doing in the community, which is a lot of practicing of empathy and breaking people into dyads to practice. But you have to think that I was actually now teaching it to kids that were court-ordered to be in a program. So most of them were kind of pissed off to be there in the first place and not necessarily like the greatest folks to put into dyads and have give and receive empathy. And I almost gave up on the entire idea until another idea came to me, which was, why don't I call on my community and see if people that I've taught NVC would be willing to come and sit in circles. So if I could get a one-to-one student-to-volunteer ratio, I'd be able to break them into dyads, and I'd be able to have people help me hold space for the youth. And so I put out some feelers in that way, and it's been working ever since. Like, I got as many people as I needed that first time through. It worked like a charm in the kids getting to give and receive empathy and practice that process. And I've never had a problem getting volunteers. In fact, I usually have more volunteers than is even necessary. And it works perfectly because not only are the kids learning the nonviolent communication process, but the volunteers are also learning it. Because after that first time through, when I asked for some of my NVC students to step forward, I started thinking about how am I going to keep this going, and then I realized, well, I don't need just people that have NVC background. I could ask anybody that's interested in holding this space with the kids if they'd be willing to do so, and then I get the benefit of teaching it not only to the teens but also to the adults in the community that are volunteering. So that's been just, it's worked so beautifully. And then the other huge part of the program is we do the restorative conferences on the front end. So when the kids first come in there, we kind of unpack, like, you know, what happened and, you know, who was affected by it and what needs to happen, if anything, to make the situation whole again. So that's another huge part of the component of the program that that makes it work real solidly. I think we get a real good sense before the kids ever even come into the NVC portion of it about who they are and what their needs are and what kinds of things we can put in place to help contribute to them. They usually stay with us for at least 3 months as part of the program. So I think I'm probably about out of time because I was told that I had about 10 minutes to just kind of give an overview of, like, what, you know, what got me to this point and what we're doing right now in the program. And so I'm going to leave it there, and I know that there will probably be some time here for some questions. And I think before we do that, I have this idea that perhaps we just do a little bit of self-connection first. This is a process that we do in my program, which is called Community Connections Restorative Justice Program. Before every class, we start out with self-connection. Before every meeting, even with the adults, we start out with self-connection. I try to use it as a practice everywhere I go. I've been in the mayor's office with some of the folks from the city leadership, and I've even asked for us to start out with self-connection in those kinds of situations as well. And mostly people are really, really receptive because it helps people just slow down a little bit and go inside and just get connected with self before actually moving out into the world. This is a big part of the NVC process. Everything is based off of having a real understanding of what needs are alive for us in the moment and working towards having those needs being met. And so often we really don't even have clarity upon that, and this just allows us to build that muscle of having awareness of what our needs are. So before we break into any questions, I would like to invite everybody for just a few seconds here of some self-connection. So I'm going to ask that wherever you are, you just close your eyes, if that's possible. And allow yourself to settle and shift your awareness internally. So sometimes what helps with that at first is to just even notice what's in your immediate environment. So you might notice some sounds. You might notice maybe how it feels to be sitting wherever you are. Maybe the air, how it feels on your skin. Allowing all of that to pull you fully present. And then shift even more so to focusing on inside of yourself, where you may have certain sensations, how they show up for you, where they show up for you. You might notice some thinking going on. And just allowing for all of it. Just allowing for if there's discomfort or general good feeling. And then use all that information to help you figure out what you might be feeling right now. And I tend to instruct folks that if you're feeling things that are pleasurable, it's probably because you have some needs that are actually being met in the moment. And if you have some feelings that are more uncomfortable or painful, it's probably because you have needs that you're mourning. And just bring some awareness to that without pushing it away. And then usually when we're in class, we're sitting in a circle and I ask everyone to check in with what you're feeling in the moment and if you have an awareness of a need that's either being met or that you're mourning. But since I don't think we're set up to do that, I'm going to end here, and then I think Dan can open up the lines or do whatever he does to take questions. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Cindy. I really enjoyed that. Met a bunch of my needs. So folks who have a question or want to enter discussion, you can type 1 on your keypad, and I'll recognize that as a raised hand. And if you want to include something about how you're feeling or some need that feels like it's being met or not being met, you're welcome to do that. So just if you type 1 on your telephone keypad, then I'll see your raised hand and I can call on you and unmute you. And I can start off by saying I feel very content and excited, and I think my needs for teamwork and contribution and social progress are being met. I see the first hand is Jacqueline Stearns. Go ahead, Jacqueline, your mic is open.
Well, this is my first conference call with this organization, and I'm feeling very excited, and I just had two quick questions. What does NBC stand for? And if we're all over the United States, then how do I know what I can do to help? Because I do feel very happy and proud to be part of this.
Well, NBC, thank you for asking that question, because I guess I'm so immersed in it that I lost sight of stating what it stands for. It's nonviolent communication. It was developed by Dr. Marshall Rosenberg. It's a process that's used all over the world in many different situations. So that's the first question. And then the second, I wasn't really clear if your question was more so related to Peace Alliance processes or specifically what I'm doing here in Tallahassee.
Well, ma'am, a little bit of both, because my husband and I are in New Jersey and we're saving up to move, and we really haven't picked a state yet. We're thinking maybe Florida, maybe Oregon. We really don't know.
Well, what I'm doing here in Tallahassee, I think, is right now, it's just here in Tallahassee. I'm guessing that there are other people using nonviolent communication out there and doing restorative practices. I think Dan can probably speak more to that. We've got just kind of this model going that, again, like I said earlier, could definitely be replicated, and I think we've worked out a lot of kinks of, like, how do you set something like this up, you know, to make it work? What are some of the challenges that seem to come up over and over? We see a lot of, like every cycle, which again, our cycles run about 3 months with each, with the youth, and each of the cycles, like I can almost tell you the exact kinds of challenges that will arise and some of the ways that we've learned to work with them. And so, yeah, I think what we've got here is kind of original and seems to work very, very well and can be replicated. So hopefully that answers your question.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Jackie. And I'll say on the Peace Alliance side, the policies that we tend to offer up to for our field folks to promote are national policies. So it wouldn't matter where you live in the country, wherever you are, say if you wanted to advocate for a Department of Peace Building or for the Youth Promise Act, those are national bills that could support and promote programs like Cindy's. So wherever you are in the country, you can do advocacy and relationship building with Congress and the media that would support this kind of program.
Thank you.
Yeah. And there are also, as Cindy said, there are local programs of all different kinds that can use support from volunteers, from people who want to learn or participate in that kind of thing. Yeah. Thanks for your question.
Thank you.
I see another hand. Oh, sorry for cutting you off there. Nancy Merritt. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hi, Cindy. This is Nancy Merritt from California. Thank you for your talk and for what you're doing. I just wanted to say I'm one of the people who did go to that conference in Berkeley in 2004, and I'm interested to know what your sort of restorative approach or peace-building approach is to the inauguration of this coming president.
Oh, that's interesting. I guess I'm... I find that to be almost like it's a personal question, but I'm willing to respond to it. I guess the way that I look at it was because I was so devastated in the 2004. I mean, so devastated. I'm imagining the way many people are having a response to this last election. And maybe I'm just way too optimistic, but I can't even believe like what ended up coming out of that devastation on a personal level and even a community level. Like it was the catalyst to make me get up off my rump and do something, you know? And so I just look at what just happened as even more of a catalyst to have more people get up off there. Rears and do something. And I can just say, you know, I see the work on a daily basis live in front of me and miracles happening on a daily basis live in front of me. And so in a very strange sort of way, I mean, that's not to say that I'm excited about it, but I actually feel hopeful because of my own experience and how it has played out.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Cindy, I wonder if you would be willing, because I've been so impressed with some of your approach to, like, your neighbors and people close to you that you thought, you know, maybe Trump supporters. Would you be willing to talk a little bit about your personal experience and attitude with that?
I think, well, it's funny because Dan, you this morning posted a video on Facebook about this guy that, this African-American guy who was, got befriended members of the Ku Klux Klan. He was very interested in knowing who would hate him so much when they don't even know him, you know, and how he went to this, he intentionally went out of his way to get to know people. And yeah, I guess, I think where you're heading with that question is that I mean, I have neighbors on both sides of me that I know flat out. I mean, we've had conversations. They voted for somebody different than I voted for. And, you know, and I, the day after the election, I said, can we please go for a walk and you tell me why I shouldn't be freaking out right in this moment? You know, like, please give me some insider's view here, you know. And I guess where you're going from, Dan, you and I had some conversation the next day, and I don't remember how I put it. Maybe you can remind me, but it was something about, like, that I'm wanting to have faith that there's, like, these people that live next door to me, I believe that they have intelligence, and I believe that, you know, they have good, very good hearts, and somehow they just are seeing things really, really differently from me, like really differently from me, and that maybe there's something here that I really don't get, that might not be so bad. I don't know. That's where I am with it. I have to stay in that line of hope because I don't choose to go to the other side in terms of like being dark about it. Just don't.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. That was really kind of what I was referring to. I appreciated you kind of, to my mind, went on this sort of a mission of listening. You wanted to find out, you know, tell me where you're coming from, help me to understand. If you wanted to make, the relationship was important and it was worth it to you to spend time with respectfully listening to what this person was seeing. So, you know, and that's how I saw it. And that's a powerful approach. So I was glad that Nancy asked.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, in the essence of nonviolent communication, I mean, that is the backbone to all of it. Like, we don't necessarily have to agree, but it is important to move towards one another and to forge those conversations and to hold space for one another. And, yeah, you know, it might be us that ends up doing that work. Maybe not the other person, and that there is work in that. There is work in that to be able to like keep doing it and working through, so you don't have to hold on to the resent. I don't really know where I'm going with this, other than that it frees me up internally. Like, I really do want to be the Bill. Mm-hmm. I want to be the Bill. I don't want to just preach about peace. I want to actually live it first and live it in my interactions as much as possible and let it flow from there. And that doesn't mean, like, just closing my eyes and not being in action. Like, I want to be able to learn how to be in action and come from a place of internal freedom as well. And that's not an easy thing to do, but I really believe like the processes that the Peace Alliance has been advocating for years and has helped me to learn has actually gotten me closer to being able to do that, you know, and I'm doing it while being active in my community and working towards the things that I really want in my life and in our world.
Really, really wonderful. Thank you. I mean, that's my judgment, non-NVC language, but I really appreciate all of that. I want to remind folks that this call is being recorded, and a recording will be available probably within a few days. If you're enjoying it as much as I am and maybe want to share it with somebody else, you'll be able to share the link. There are several other people with hands up, but we really need to move on to other stuff in our agenda. Cindy, if anybody has a question that they want to email you directly, would you share an email address where they can email you?
Sure. It's opi@tallynet, TALLYNET.com.
Again, that's opi, O-P as in Peter, I, at tallynet, TALLYNET.com, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Awesome. Well, I so appreciate you being here and everything that you shared. You're more than welcome to stick around for the rest of the call. And also, if you have other priorities and need to take care of other business, we'll understand if you need to go. So thank you so much again for being with us, Cindy.
Thanks, Dan. Bye-bye.
Sure, bye. All right. So next up, we have someone who's going to say a few words who needs no introduction for most of you, but I'll give her a little one anyway. Judy Kimmel has poured her cheerful and resilient heart and soul into this organization and this movement for over 10 years. She is the president of our board of directors, and we are so lucky to have her. Give me just a minute to find her on my dashboard so I can unmute her. Judy, talk among yourselves. There she is. Okay, Judy, your mic's open.
Hi, everybody. It's Judy, and Judy gives her a little sing to my soul because I can't tell you how many people have said that to me over the life of my name. So anyway, it's an absolute pleasure to be on this call. And Cindy, I hope you're still on the call. I'm just so moved by your story and your intention and tenacity in doing what your heart called you to do. And the work you're doing in Tallahassee is truly fantastic. And it just reminds me that we have people all over this country doing this work. So it's very heartwarming, and I just want to honor you because it's not easy. And it takes courage, and it takes resilience, and it takes a certain dedication and passion. So to all the Cindys on this call and that reverberate out from this call, I really want to acknowledge you on behalf of the board and behalf of all, the planet, actually. It's not the board at all. It's the planet and all we need to do. I was thinking about Dan asked me earlier today if I wanted to be on the call, and, of course, I'm honored to be on the call, and I was thinking about, you know, what's going on in the planet. I mean, just the horrific things that are happening in Aleppo and Syria. I mean, my heart just cries when I see that. And then the transition period that we're having in our own country. And I am a daughter of someone who, my father was in the government, and I moved around a great deal during my childhood, similar to a military brat kind of thing. And I have an innate dislike for change. and I've learned this psychologically over my life, but it certainly is rings true. So we are now whenever we have a presidential transition, we are in change, and it is challenging, and we're all coping in all the different ways we can to change, whether you voted for Donald Trump or you didn't vote for Donald Trump, we are in a major transition. And I think it calls on the best of us to be the best of us as we move forward and to do exactly what Cindy was referencing in this call. I honor that. And I thought today I might read, hopefully it's not redundant to many of you, an email that we sent out, email blast, from one of our board directors, Emily Wickman, who is an amazing woman and is deeply grounded in mindfulness and is a life coach, and I've known her for many years, and she wrote this. And I just want to take a small excerpt because it really says to me kind of where we are as an organization, but also as we are as a country and as a world. And so I'm going to take a quick excerpt from that and read it to you. She says, "During this period of introspection, we are clear peace is built in pieces by individual people like you and me, one peaceful act at a time. The question we are asking ourselves is what do we do now? What can we, as an organization, as individuals, do to actively work to grow our country, bridge the divide, and build peace? We feel it's important to remember that this moment can launch a newly invigorated dialogue. Now is not the time to retreat into our private lives, look the other way, and move on as if nothing significant happened. On the contrary, now is the time for bigger hands and unwavering determination. This is the time to stay awake, alert, participate, and step by step, piece by piece, take action in whatever ways we can to create understanding, knowledge, and a more peaceful and just world. We encourage you to amplify our collective voice for nonviolence and peace. I think it's just, when I reread that today, I just thought that just epitomizes exactly how I feel personally, and I know our board feels, and I know our organization, and so many of you out there feel, is that this really is an opportunity to reevaluate and to have, it really creates an environment for breakthrough. So I'm very actually excited, as Cindy said, about the opportunity we have in front of us. And the other thing I wanted to say is that we are grateful for those of you who, if any of you participated in the national survey we had, and if you haven't, I encourage you to do so. We had a national survey to kind of assess what our network was feeling out there, no matter whether you're in North Carolina or Texas or California or Maine. We really do value your feedback. So if you have an opportunity, we sent it out a few weeks ago, but we'd love to hear back from you. And the other thing is I just want to acknowledge the gift of peace. And you're being on this call and you're doing everything every day to be the peace that we so desperately want, not only in this country but around the globe. So thank you so much, and it's really an honor to talk to you and be on this call. And thank you, Dan, for the work and the really centered being you are that handles these calls every month, and they are truly inspiring. So thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Judy. That was inspiring to me, too, and it's my pleasure. Okay. So next, we have an update from a member of our Department of Peacebuilding Committee. I would say they are sort of semi-independent. We are lucky to be affiliated with them, the Department of Peacebuilding Committee of the Peace Alliance. And the representative who's with us is Kendra Mann. And for this introduction, I had the assistance of our illustrious California coordinator, Nancy Merritt, because Kendra is someone who, to my eye, has worked so steadily and cheerfully in so many roles over the years that I wanted to call on Nancy to make sure that I did her some justice. So I will now attempt to channel Nancy the Great as I share some of her words mixed with some of mine. Kendra Mann has been a leader in the Peace Alliance campaign for U.S. Department of Peacebuilding movement since 2005 or so. She's from the hotbed of activism in Northern California and lives in Petaluma, north of San Francisco. She was a congressional district team leader in the district that was represented for many years by Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey, who co-sponsored the Department of Peacebuilding legislation every time it was introduced during her tenure. We consider Kendra to be our Northwest California regional leader. She is also a member of the National Department of Peacebuilding Committee, and she actively spreads peacebuilding at the local level. Along with Maggie Corrin, they come together with other peace and justice organizations in Sonoma County to recognize the Season for Nonviolence from January 30th to April 4th. Kendra, Maggie, and the California Peace Alliance received a recognition award for this from the Sonoma County Peace and Justice Center, and those efforts are the inspiration for the National Department of Peacebuilding Committee's Season for Nonviolence efforts to promote the U.S. Department of Peacebuilding legislation and to sign on more co-sponsors for that legislation. Kendra's curiosity about peacebuilding and her genuine striving to be the peace are an inspiration to all in the California and national DOP campaign and beyond. We are blessed to have Kendra as a friend, a comadre, and a fellow peace traveler. And, of course, there is so much more. And, again, I've got to search to find her so that I can unmute her. Kendra, where are you? It's a good thing there's so many people on the call that it takes me a minute to search. There she is. Okay, go ahead.
Hi,
Kendra.
Dan.
Your mic is open. Hi.
Thank you.
There you are.
That was pretty overwhelming.
I'm sorry.
I've never been through that before. Now I know what it feels like for other speakers who get introduced. But I'm not going to go on about that. I just want to tell you all about some of the things that the Department of Peacebuilding Committee is doing and has been doing. Just recently, we submitted suggestions to Barbara Lee, the sponsor of the Department of Peacebuilding legislation, because when we do this Department of Peacebuilding, it has to be reintroduced every 2 years until it passes. So every 2 years, then, we have an opportunity to update some language or maybe change some things depending on what we've learned. So we just went through that process, and then Representative Barbara Lee from Berkeley will be deciding what she wants to change or not change in the legislation before she introduces it. We hope that we're going to have the H.R. 1111 numerology. Again, we learned that there's some symbolism there. So we hope we're going to have that. As Dan mentioned, the season for nonviolence is coming up January 30th. And part of what the Department of Peacebuilding Committee has been doing is using that as both an educational tool and a lobbying tool. So during the season for nonviolence, we contact members of Congress to talk to them about co-sponsoring the bill. This year we'll be talking to our supporters in terms of being original co-sponsors before the bill is even introduced. But we'll also be reaching across the aisle and talking to other new people. And then Piece of the Pie is a Peace Alliance tradition that we've adopted as well. We're on Mother's Day. We meet with our congresspeople or their aides in our local districts and bring them a pie and ask them to help us to give peace and peace building a piece of the federal budget pie. Then there's a booklet that we came across almost by accident, hearing an interview on KPFA with the author. The booklet is called "Why We Need a Department of Peace," and it's just a small booklet, but it talks about the history of the Department of Peace idea from the beginning of our country. But it stops with the new version Dennis Kucinich's bill, and so we are working with the author to write a new chapter for the booklet about the history since that time. And then meanwhile, we're still just doing planning of how we can keep spreading the message and planning for lobby days, probably near Peace Day again in 2017. And we need help, and all are welcome. We have a call on the, it's on the third Monday of the month for all those who are interested in working on the campaign for Department of Peacebuilding. And similar to this national call, Nancy Merritt hosts a monthly call on the second Monday of the month. And we also have speakers on that call, which are inspirational. So if you want to get on either of those lists, you can email nancy@thepeacealliance.org. And we'd love to have your help or your suggestions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Kendra, so much. And thanks to all the folks on the Department of Peacebuilding Committee. They really have been just a steady, shining light in our midst. So, moving right along. The December action. Okay, as I mentioned, all of you should have in your email inboxes an action sheet. And this action sheet is very similar to the action that we asked folks to take the last 2 months. And it has to do with trying to get the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Reauthorization Act. Okay, it's an act to reauthorize the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act. It's been passed through the House, and we want it to get passed through the Senate, and there are just a few days now left in the schedule for the Congress. So it's got to be the next couple of days. It could be tonight. You can call and leave a message. Does anybody have that action sheet in front of them and is willing to read it aloud from it a little bit? If you have access to that action sheet, if you've already downloaded the attachment and you're willing to do a little bit of reading aloud, press 1 on your keypad and we can hear somebody else's voice read some of that. Well, great. I see a couple of ones lighting up. Let's go to Steve Drucker. Steve, your mic is open. Can you hear me?
Yes. This Steve happens to be a woman, just to clarify that. What would you like me to read?
Would you read the title at the top and then those first few paragraphs, please?
December 2016 action. Juvenile justice reform needs our support in Senate. Act now before this session of Congress ends. The Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Reauthorization Act, which for short is JJDPA, of 2015, Senate Bill 1169, is ready for a vote in the Senate. It is the core of nearly everything the federal government does in juvenile justice, and it's past due for reauthorization. This year, it includes provisions from our long-supported Youth Promise Act. Thankfully, on September 22, 2016, the House passed H.R. Bill 5963, which is a companion bill to Senate Bill 1169. Help continue this important progress. Shall I go on?
Sure. Go ahead. Just that next paragraph, please.
Take action. Contact your senators today to urge them to move S-1169 to a vote before this congressional session ends and the new Congress and president move into office. Action. Call your two senators and urge them to support. Call the U.S. Capitol switchboard at 202-224-3121. They will connect with you. They will connect you with the correct office.
Okay, perfect. So what comes next, there are a couple of pointers for that call, and then there's some background about the bill. It talks a little bit more about the bill. For the folks who have done this before, you know you don't have to be a mile deep in knowledge about the bill in order to advocate for it. It's enough to say, this is a bill that's important to me. Here's the bill number. If there is something that calls to you that you want to share about why this really matters to you, that's a rich thing that could be valuable for them to hear, but it's not absolutely necessary. So it's really easy. Anybody can do it. The Youth Promise Act, for folks that are not so familiar, is a bill that would allow for the kinds of programs that Cindy described, these alternatives to incarceration, alternatives to criminal sentencing, would allow these kind of programs to receive more funding and more community support. And I've included some sort of special stuff on this action sheet. And Steve, if you're willing to read aloud a little further, on the second page, in sort of in honor of Cindy's approach and sort of this direction of self-connection and empathetic communication, I made some suggestions here. And this was actually done in concert with our friend and colleague, Leah Wolfthal. Many of you were probably on the call with Leah Wolfthal, who's the executive director of an organization called IAISH that works on empathetic negotiation skills. So she and I crafted together these empathetic approaches to action. Steve, do you see that on the second page?
Yes, I do.
Hey,
if you feel like you have capacity and interest, you might wish to also use a, quote, connection request, unquote, something like, I am wondering what it is like for you to hear my request, or how is that to hear, or would you tell me what you're hearing me say? Or you might form a, quote, action request, unquote, for instance, ending with a phrase like, could you tell me one action I could take to help move this bill along in your office? Or could you enlighten me about what's up for the senator? I think maybe that means the Senate, senator, I don't know. Or
that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Or could you share with me any guesses about obstacles the senator might be facing or feeling in supporting this bill, et cetera? That's
great.
The end.
Wonderful. Thank you. So this is just a little bit of suggestions for ways that you could self-connect, check in with yourself, see what feelings and needs might be up for you around this bill. What needs would it meet for you to pass the Youth Promise Act in the JJDPA, and come from that place? It's your personal needs. It might be a need for community safety, or it might be a need for contribution on your part, or community or cooperation. So whatever it looks like to you, this is a suggestion that you can check in with yourself before taking this political action, and also be available to maybe check in personally with the person you're talking with. Thank you, Steve. I'm going to turn off your mic now. I was thinking about doing some role play, because I know some people love role play, but mostly me. But I think I'll open up some time for community sharing, because I want to make sure that people have a chance to share with each other on the call. So if you want to role play calls to Congress, calls to the Senate in support of this bill, I encourage you to pair up with somebody, practice with your dog or cat, practice with people in your house, talking to the senator's staff and saying, this is what's important to me. So I just put down all the hands that were up from before. So if you have something that you'd like to share with the group on this call, go ahead and push one now. If you thought your hand was raised before, go ahead and push and raise your hand again, and I'll call on you so you can share with each other. Go ahead, Nancy.
Okay, I just wanted to give a quick update on the California folks. We were at the Democratic Party statewide meeting just the weekend after elections, and we did a lot of stuff. We did this action that you're doing tonight, asking people there to call. We focused on Dianne Feinstein. We also partnered with Kids for Peace from Southeast San Diego and had them there with us, and that was quite different for that kind of setting and actually really, really refreshing in that sort of depressing time. And we honored the California Veterans Caucus, who have been one of our main supporters for Department of Peace Building. So it was a good connecting time. And I also just wanted to say we're ending this year with 41 sponsors, co-sponsors of the Department of Peace Building. And thank you to all of you who helped with that. Every one of those 41 people, we could tell you many stories about, and probably at a minimum of 20 contacts with every one of those. So persistence is kind of the byword here.
Wonderful. Yeah, on that note, that's wonderful work. And just on that note about persistence, for folks who may have already taken an action just like this, this December action, if you called last month, if you called the month before, I heartily encourage you to call again. This is, as I said, the last few days of the congressional session. We've been promoting the Youth Promise Act all different ways, and little pieces of it have passed here and there. And so there have been some little victories that we've celebrated over the months. But this is 2 years of work that's coming down to the wire in these next few days. So I just encourage everyone to make those calls, call the congressional switchboard. Even if you don't know who your senators are, you can say, please connect me with the senators from wherever you're from, senators from North Dakota, the senators from Florida, and they'll do it one by one. And leave a message, even though it's nighttime in Washington, D.C., So thank you, Nancy, for the update. I'd love to hear about those great activities, and I just had to segue it into encouragement on this action.
Good work.
thank you. Thank you. Okay, I see a hand from John Baum. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, it's John Baum from Patchogue, New York. And this is only the second time I've been on a conference call. But last year, about this time, there was one on the Youth Promise Act. And at that time, you gave specific instructions on how to write a letter to the editor. And I immediately sat down after the conference call, wrote a letter, the first time I've ever tried it in my life because, you know, I'm a little bashful and insecure, I guess. But I was really thrilled that my letter got published in Newsday, which is a largely, you know, has over a million distribution on Long Island. And so I just wanted to suggest that you do that more often. That instruction that you gave is probably worth repeating and maybe even putting it on an email or something instead of over a conference call. So thanks for that. It was very helpful.
Terrific. I appreciate that. It's great to hear that it got published. I would, if you wanted to take a further step, I know you're looking for suggestions and advice, but this is for anybody, and I often tell field folks if they want to take that letter to the editor a little bit further, if it gets published, even if it doesn't, you can send a copy of that to the staff of your congresspeople. Because if the newspaper editors think that it's worth printing, that's an indication to your elected representatives that it has a little bit more social relevance, because those newspaper editors are kind of the gatekeepers of social relevance. So just want to encourage anybody who gets something printed, or even if you just write a letter to the editor, go ahead and send that, because it shows your dedication as well and your commitment to the cause. But all those action sheets, all the guidance for the letters to the editor and op-eds that we have promoted over the last 3.5 years, they're all on the Deep Action or Deep Advocacy page of the website. So if you want to find those action sheets, the guidance, you can find them from the homepage at peacealliance.org. You can go to the Deep Advocacy page, and from there you can track all the different action sheets on different topics.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, John. Glad you're back with us once again. So one last note, that anyone who does want to role play or practice talking with your congressional staff or has any further questions, feel free to email me at dan@peacealliance.org, dan@peacealliance.org. We're at the top of the hour, so I'm going to open the mic after sharing my all-time favorite closing quote, which is, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." That's Eleanor Roosevelt. She said, "The future belongs to those who believe in the beauty of their dreams." And I wish you all a good night, and your mics are all open, so feel free to say whatever you like to each other.
Good night, everybody. Good night.
Bye.
Night.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
John.
Bye.
Love you.